family planning. First up, we'll welcome Tulip Tree Creamery, a local urban creamery that will make you want to eat your weight in cheese, truly. Then we'll catch up with our show mascot, Paul Poutit, as well as we'll finally come around to talk to Family Choice Surrogacy, a company that wants to help educate Indy on all family building options available today. All that and much more on The Edge.
Your audio and video source featuring Indianapolis Tech Trends, marketing industry champions, and business innovation. This is Edge of Indy, broadcasting from Edge Media Studios. Let's get today's conversation started.
All right. Well, welcome back. Hey, if you haven't come across what Edge of Indy is all about, let me tell you a quick thing. By the way, my name is Aaron Sparks. I'm the CEO of Site Strategics, as well as Edge Media Studios. And we bring this show to you each and every week for local Indianapolis businesses and just to be able to show what's going on here in Indianapolis. We focus on local entrepreneurs and businesses, movers and shakers around the city. We feature people and organizations out there helping make Indianapolis a great place to work, live, and visit. So we constantly promote local, and we want you to learn about local often and choose local often. That's what Edge of Indy is all about. So I wanted to introduce myself again. Hey, Aaron Sparks here, but to my right, I did two for there. To my right, we also have Brittany Simpson, who's the Director of Marketing Services here at Site Strategics.
Hi.
Hello.
There's cheese here.
So. There is cheese. We're all distracted by the cheese.
I am.
And we also want to introduce our new friend. It's Fons Smits, co-owner of Tulip Tree Creamery. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great.
Excellent.
Yes.
Thanks for bringing cheese.
Yeah. He's got that cheesy grin, doesn't he?
Oh, cheese.
Yeah.
Oh, cheese.
Oh. Okay, so we're all abuzz about the cheese here. Welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about Tulip Tree Creamery as Brittany wishes she was actually eating this cheese right now.
Yes, please.
Yeah, Tulip Tree Creamery. We're a nice, small-scale, hands-on creamery right on the northwest side. We're located in Park 100. We're in business now for almost 4 years, and it has been a long time in the making in a way. You know, we started, I actually came into the U.S. here in Indiana in 2003 and worked in several creameries and worked with my the co-owner, Laura Davenport. And, you know, that's we started over there. She did a lot of the sales at Traders Point Creamery. That's where we kind of both started. We moved to another place in Illinois. We started up a creamery. And then we decided, you know what? I think it's time to do something new. You know, we had to do some new cheeses, new style cheeses. I was always making these big wheels. Uh-huh. And I wanted to do something very special. Uh-huh. And got some creative ideas. And Laura said, hey, you know, it's nice to say, hey, we have to make this or make that. Or, you know, these nice bloomy rinds, these nice washed rinds. And create something different on the market in Indiana, which is not out there. So that's how we kind of started. And it was kind of the moment. You know, you have those moments when everybody tells you to do it.
Right.
And if you don't do it, you have to stop talking about it. And that was kind of, for us, was the same thing. And said, okay, let's put it together. We start in a very small little place. Mm-hmm. See if we can kick it off. And you know, things have been going like crazy. It's been now almost 4 years. And we're now working on expanding our production. And the product has gone from where we just started with some fresh cheeses in only here on the farmers markets with some spreadable cheeses, some mozzarella, and afterwards we started developing some more aged cheeses, and of course our top seller, the Trillium, which is a nice bloomy rind triple cream, which is like
that's my favorite.
Yeah, and you know, that's a cheese where you know it's so nice, delicate, and creamy. It kind of, when it gets totally ripe, it just melts everywhere. You know,
oh,
it just
my Lord.
You eat that, and it just like, and that's our top seller, and it goes everywhere. We now it's so incredible that as a small little business, we ship that all the way to LA. You know, we have people there going into stores and buy our products. We ship it to New York and New Jersey, and Chicago, and all of course all over here and in the Indy area. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great to hear the chefs here in Indianapolis reacting to our quality of the products and love to work with it. And those are kind of great things. So it inspires us also to do more things. You know, we love to work on new products and see what we come up with because how we work with that. So now it's almost already 4 years and we keep growing. And we'd love to keep going with these kind of products, mm-hmm. work on new stuff. And then at the same time, we always wanted to do some with education as well. So that's what a big part of what we really want to do too is, besides making all these great cheeses, actually educate people about these cheeses and talk about them and teach them. So people can actually come in and we show them and we teach them how to make some of these great cheeses.
We are such an uncultured group of
speak for yourself
of society when it gets down to knowledge about cheese, right?
I mean, cultured when it comes to cheese. Okay,
she said it too. See, it's a dual pun right there. But there are some basics that everybody knows, but there's such a range of flavors, and such a range of cheeses and different textures, right?
Yeah, and it's totally like that. It's you know, people are always amazed how much science it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when we tell people about it, you know, cheese making is very much the same basic steps.
Mm-hmm.
But to get to all these different flavors, you just have to change tiny little things in there. You change different cultures, which create different flavors, your different temperatures, different times. And then, you know, a big factor, of course, is the person who actually makes it. You know, and those are the kind of big things, the little nuances which you put into the process to make it. And that's how it comes out. And then making it is only one part of it. And then it actually comes down to taking care of it, the affinage. You're taking care of the cheeses.
Oh, what's that word?
Affinage. You know, it's just taking care of the cheeses to kind of make them bloom, you know?
Huh.
And so like the cheeses, like we have the Bloomy Rinds, the Trillium, you know, they after I make them, they go into the aging rooms for, let's say, about 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where our affineur, Stephanie, she takes care of them. And she makes sure that they're being turned all the time. And when they're ready, they're, you know, being issued to sales. And doing that all just right, that makes them just perfect.
So it's more than a science. It's a science plus art.
Plus magic.
And it's a lot of passion has to go in. You know, you cannot do this as a small-scale business. You know, it's really an artisan profession.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the passion for it, you're not motivated to it, people will actually taste it, because everything what we do, it's a handcrafted job. You know,
how does one become a what does Stephanie do? What is that?
She's an affineur.
What is that? How do I do that? How do I become that?
Yeah, it's I think over here, I don't know. I don't think there's actually like a fixed course anywhere where you can do that. There are a couple of places where you can do a course for like a couple of days. Usually it's related to some kind of cheesemaking organization or something like that. But
maybe Stephanie can teach me.
Yeah, you know, and like there is one where you can sign up and you go to France for a week, you know, something like that.
I'm sorry, I have to go to France for a week to train.
Gotta learn.
Stephanie
gotta hit the books.
How to make cheese.
But it's a lot of times with this kind of these kind of things, it's a self-taught thing. And for me, it all started a little different. When I grew up in Holland, you know, I actually studied food science for 7 years and specialized in dairy processing and did that for a long time. And of course, like that, it's still, you learn a lot of the theory. It's a whole different thing than actually when you have to practice that and put it in, you know, and going busy with that. But then the 25 years after that, you know, when I spent my time in the dairy industry, and I kind of stayed always with the small scale.
Right.
I really liked that. I like that contact with, you know, actually putting my hands in the milk and just working with that. And then at the end, getting a product and move that on to the customer and hearing the reaction of it. And most of the time, that's positive.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, of course, also people prefer something else, you know. And it's a great thing. And you just have to learn. And every time, like now, even this winter, I learned a lot about the changes in the milk. How much of an effect that had on our cheeses. So although you have spent so many years working with it, learning never stops.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
So much was involved in the cheese that I love so much.
Yeah, and those are the kind of things too, which we like to tell people when they come and do the classes with us. We guide them through, you know, they do the class, but we show them where we actually make the products. We show them the aging rooms and all the work which goes into it. And like that's a big thing, like with the washed rind cheeses, you know, those cheeses are being like washed 3 times, turned, you know. So if you start counting how many times it goes through somebody's hand after me, then, you know, 3 times per week. Now, so you're looking at 9 times in the aging room, and then it actually has to be packed before it actually goes into the market.
Wow.
So there's a lot of dedication has to go into that to actually present that product.
Now, you... lived in Holland. You're from Holland. How in the world did you end up in the middle of Indiana working for an urban creamery?
Yeah.
Like, what's that journey been like? Yeah, you're a long way from home.
It's been a long way, and it's been a long, nice travel experience in a way. And like I said, I grew up in Holland, in the northern part, in the province of Friesland, which is officially part of the Netherlands. And, from my part, what I wanted to do is get my work experience outside the Netherlands. So that's how I started traveling. My first was actually with a cheesemaker in California. And that was kind of to test myself to see if, like, owning a small cheesemaking facility would be something for me. And after 1 year, I said, yes, that is something for me. But I was not ready to do that at that point. And so then I went back to Holland and went to Africa for 5 years. Worked in a Dutch development project on in East Tanzania in a city called Tanga.
Wow.
That's incredible.
And, you know, it was great. It was an amazing lesson which I've learned over there. I was managing the co-op, and halfway my time, we also started setting up a dairy processing plant. And we developed this whole infrastructure for all these farmers about collecting milk and making sure they had a market and processing it. And now that processing plant we started actually has become the biggest plant in Tanzania.
Oh, my gosh.
So it has been really a great way how you can, you know, work with that. But also actually how to deal with simple little problems, because you have to think in a very different way how to fix things. And so after about 5-6 years there, I had too many times malaria. So I had to kind of say, hey, I have to do something different. and then I went back to California. And... At that time, my girlfriend, and now my wife, Eileen, and we actually met in California the first time when I was working for a Dutch cheesemaker on the farmer's market selling cheese. And
cheese brings people together.
Exactly. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. And so then, so I worked with a small creamery in Point Reyes and developed some great cheeses for them. It was kind of a way to test myself about the handcrafted parts. Of cheese making. I really liked that. Went back to Holland, became an international consultant, traveled more around the world to a lot of different countries.
Hold on. Go to Holland and then become an international consultant.
Whoa. Yeah. In how one do sentence. I do that?
Seems pretty big jump there, Hans.
Yes, I know. It was, you know, we were looking at, it was great living in California. It was a beautiful area.
Where in California were you?
I was right in San Francisco.
And I just got back from San Francisco, and I loved it.
Yeah, it's just so amazing. And but, you know, when we were doing kind of the math and the finances, it just became too difficult to say, you know what, actually to live there and as a simple cheesemaker, there was no way. So, and I was offered a job in Holland in a consulting company and was able to get a house in our village where I grew up, close to my parents. So it was just like, okay, you know, it's an easy way. And so did that for 2 years. And then an opportunity came along to help the creamery here in the Traders Point Creamery. When they started up, they were looking for somebody. And they had a friend who came from the same area in the Netherlands as I am. So we kind of connected.
Small world, right?
And I came over, you know, and 3 months, I was going to go here. I was going to be here for 3 months. And 3 months became like 5 years. And then, yeah, that's how it all started. And you know, and Indiana is such a great place because, you know, it's a lot of people think, why Indiana? And but I think Indiana is such a nice place that it's like, especially for the food right now, there is so much going on. You know, we love it because we see it with the nice restaurants popping up. When I came in here, there was not even one Whole Foods in Indiana.
Right.
Of course, now you see that development. There is a, people are very interested in
exploring.
New foods.
Yeah.
In exploring the food sector. You know, new things, not anymore the standard types of cheeses or standard types of beer or whatever. It's all about the new stuff. And what do you do with that? And on top of that, what you see is that there's a lot more interaction between the different producers. Like one of the cheeses we make is our hops, which is a beer cheese. And what we do with that is it's a double cream. It's great. It's a great snack cheese. Kids love it too. And we actually use beer from local brewers, and we incorporate that into the process.
That's awesome.
And we do that. We mix that. It's not always the same one. No, we use it from a lot of different brewers. I cannot even remember how big the list is right now.
Oh, very cool.
You know, it's those kind of things. And for us, it's really nice. And as a developing company, it's so easy to get our products to the East and the West Coast where we have distribution. So it's right in the center. Logistical-wise, it works great. And so looking at that, the developing food sector right here in Indianapolis, you know, a market like that, plus having access to the outside to not big urban areas, yeah, it just makes very much sense. And yeah,
no, the growth of Indianapolis. I mean, it could almost be said that we're starting to rival Chicago in the diversity of our restaurants and the diversity of some unique culinary arts such as yourself, right? Yep. We're interviewing and talking to so many unique entrepreneurs that are bringing that type of artisanship and investing in Indianapolis, and we really do appreciate that, because it brings everybody's education of the food and spirits realm, to a much higher degree.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and it makes it very interesting, makes it very exciting. You know, like I had one employee this weekend her boyfriend works in a local restaurant,
mm-hmm.
Milktooth, and you know, she brought back this nice little pastry, and they incorporated our foxglove into it. It was delicious, you know.
Uh-huh. And best dessert you've ever had.
Yes, but those are the kind
you're
of
not
things
biased that, at all.
No, but it's like those kind of things. It's like even things which we don't even think about.
Yeah.
Like we had a place where they used some of our cheeses in ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
You know stuff.
Yeah. Oh.
You know stuff where we don't even think about.
Wow.
But then
yum.
Others start messing with that, and they start making nice, great things. Yep. And it's so interesting to see that going on. You know. And so it's fascinating. And
cheese and ice cream, that just brings a tear to my eye. I can't even think about that.
And, you know, and there's something about food, you know, that it's always great. You know, if you make a product, you can give it to people can enjoy it, mm-hmm. and it's such a nice thing. And most of the times people really appreciate it, you know. Like if we go somewhere, if we go to a party or something, yeah, we cannot go without cheese.
Yeah, kind of assumed.
It goes without saying, do you eat cheese every day?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Your own cheese? Or just cheese, just all the cheese.
I taste a lot of our cheese during the day because, you know, making it and tasting it. We taste every cheese before it's being packed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have most of the time that's Stephanie.
What a tough job. So,
yeah, it's very tough. And it's sometimes it's heartbreaking when we have to say, you know what, that we're not going to use this. We're not going to put this
not
on the
quite,
market.
Not quite,
you know?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, it's just not up to the quality which we want.
That's great.
And I had to do that yesterday, too, where I had to take a couple batches out, which I just didn't like. And it's not representative of, you know, what we really want to be.
And what do you do with those cheeses?
Right now, we
delivers them to my house.
Well,
where could one be at the dumpster behind the?
Which dumpster do you put that in?
Yeah, so it's we actually, you know, and that's the nice thing too. As a company, you know, we also want to be more and more environmental sensitive to a lot of things. And I think at this point, you cannot do without that. You know, it's such an important part.
Right.
You know, that starts with our farmer. He's certified humane. So we it's very important for us to know that the animals are being treated well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the key thing to us. I think we want to have happy cows, and I think most of our customers, aww, that's a big thing. And that's already a big inspiration for me to start working on new products,
mm-hmm.
because you know that the milk is going to be good. And then, but also about, we're looking at like packaging material. Is it recyclable? You know, we shipped in, like last year, we switched from our shipping packages from more styrofoam to a kind of compostable material.
Oh, cool.
And for the whey, the cheese whey, I got in touch with a farmer who's actually picking up our cheese whey now and feeds that to the hogs.
Happy hogs.
Very happy hogs. So they... And he gets also some of the leftover cheeses. And it was funny.
I see how you are. I see how you are.
So,
I got to bring my farm animals just so I can get some space.
Animals.
So, but he shared with me 2 weeks ago that when we had some leftover stuff that the hogs actually chose to go for the cheese instead of going for the regular food. So
that's awesome.
Well, so yeah,
they're no dummies.
Exactly.
So Fonz, you've had tremendous success without a retail shop, and the entrepreneur in me wants to understand and kind of unpack that a little bit. What do you attribute that successful growth? I mean, 4 years is a very short runway for distributing across the entire country. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
So what would you attribute your success to in that small time period?
I think a big part of it was that we really took time to prep for it.
Uh-huh.
It's not something where we really stepped into this immediately. You know, we really, the years of experience which we got from me and from Laura, you know, in the sales part, in production and the sales part, and then the managing of a company, really prepped us for focusing in on the key things which are really important. And, you know, sometimes it's so easy to diversify too much,
mm-hmm.
and lose your focus.
Yep.
And that was a big thing. Originally, we had in the plan to kind of set up a retail, And then I actually worked with some students and about researching that part, if retail, if it actually made sense. What came out of it was that, you know, at best we would break even on it. Hmm. And so, well, then you don't want to do
That's
it.
That's not inspiring.
No. So then I said, okay, yeah, let's focus on just making the best product we can. Just focus on that part and supply our distributors who can then supply the restaurants and give them the best service we can. You know, so we can push out that best product instead of, again, you know, trying to make too many things go work. And that was that's the big thing. Mm. So I think that concentration on a few things and then, yeah, just the focus and the service, those are the most important parts with that. And then really look at the budget. We did this on a very small budget. And one of the biggest things, which really was a surprise to me, and even though managing another startup, mm-hmm. when you do it yourself, it's a whole different thing. Although it helps if you did it before, but I underestimated how much time it does, how much time it takes to put into getting a business. And it doesn't matter if it's a creamery or another startup, another whole.
Sure.
As an owner, you just have to put so much extra time into getting this thing going because it's the only place where you can save money too.
Right.
And I thought I could do some extra things next to it. No way. You know, I'm working 70, 80 hours a week still now.
Amen.
So it's about that. And you have to persevere. You motivate yourself. It takes the whole family, you know, to really have everybody behind you. And, you know, and in the end, it will pay off. And you always get setbacks too, you know, those big bills which come in and which you never expected. And but in the end, you know, it will come through and people will see. You know, if you have a good product mm-hmm. and you do it right, typically it will go. Mm-hmm. You know, and stick with it and stick with the good concept. And I think that's where we are right now, and that's where we are now spending money on expanding our production. And we really pushed it as long as possible. You know, about waiting as long as possible for this expansion, and now we just have to do it.
So we are all about shopping, eating, drinking, supporting local things here on Edge of Indy, as I'm sure you know. You do the same, and that's something that you've accepted in your business too, is that you only want to work kind of on the local scale. So you work with that certified humane dairy in Seymour, Indiana. You're located here in good old Indiana. What made being local so important to you, or why is that such an important part of your business?
One thing is, like, we really, although I'm from Holland, you know, we really are considering ourselves as an Indiana company. So if you say, hey, I'm an Indiana company, but I'm pulling my milk from Iowa, mm-hmm. it kind of loses its own thing.
Sure does,
so,
yeah.
And there are so many small farmers in Indiana who really need support. And, you know, and I've worked with several, and it's incredible to see, like, when we make great products and we put it out, and you show that to the farmer and say, hey, I used your milk to make this product, he's incredibly proud. You know, it's probably he will say it's the best cheese you've ever tasted. You know? So it's a great thing. And
absolutely.
And when you deal with this kind of thing, so it's a very much partnerships where you're looking for. And we're not looking at growing our business to extremely big sizes. No, mm-hmm. because at that point we have to start compromising on certain things, which we don't want to do. So we are very much set on, you know, we want to be a handcrafted company. It makes us special. We want to be an Indiana company, so we source as much as possible from Indiana. Sometimes it doesn't work, and then we have to look. But if other options come along, then yes, we definitely, it's our first choice. And I think it just makes sense to do it like that. You know, I think there are too many companies going too far away, and it just loses its special mm-hmm. thing. So.
I could not agree more.
No, and that's really at the core of what we try to showcase on the show. So you're our kind of people, Fonz.
You are.
What's your favorite offering? Where should people who haven't tried Tulip Tree start?
Well, it depends a lot. You know, like, of course, when we have people coming into farmers markets, mm-hmm. we have now two winter markets going on, and they can find all that on our website. You know, the markets which we do, plus mm-hmm. also the stores which we sell, it's the easiest to go to tuletreecreamery.com mm-hmm. for that. And and typically when people ask, so what kind of cheeses, what kind of flavors are you into? And some people just have no clue. Mm-hmm. And then we usually start them off on the mild side, you know, not the heavy, strong flavors. And a nice, easygoing flavor, which usually is a big hit, is our top seller, is Trillium.
Yeah.
You know, it's this nice, creamy sweetness of the cream and just kind of melts away on your tongue.
You realize you're not getting out of here holding Trillium as you walk out the door, you know?
So, and then we have, like, our spreadable cheese with mm-hmm. the herbs. It's an easy way. It's an easygoing. you know, I know my daughter loves it. You know, she eats away with that. And then we can usually start exploring a little bit more the stronger flavors. And some people love the you go into the washed rind cheeses, and those mm-hmm. are stronger, very pungent flavors.
Mm-hmm.
The tiger lily has a little bit of mixture. It's a little bit milder in flavor.
Oh, that's a good one, too. I've had that one. That's a really good one.
And I really like when it gets almost ripe, it gets this very kind of roasted flavor at the end. I love that. And then you have the foxglove, which is more like there's a French you call an époise. And époise is kind of a washed rind, but it becomes very runny. It's very strong. If you have that in your fridge, you know it.
Mm.
You know? So that's kind of, but some people love it. And that's the cheese where you love it or you hate it.
Yep.
There's nothing in between. And and then we have our wheels too, you know, like our bear cheese is an easygoing cheese. And we have the nettle cheese is a nice fresh cheese where we put some herbs on the outside. It's mm-hmm. a great dessert. I love that on a nice salad.
Oh, there you go.
Because it kind of melts away, like with it. When you, like feta can sometimes be a little firm.
Yep.
But if you put a nettle on there, our cheese, it just, it, like when you bite into it, it just melts away. So it's such a nice thing. And
I am sitting here suffering not eating cheese right now.
I know. Hey, and good for you because you made me suffer on the chocolate cake incident.
I know. I'm sorry.
Paybacks are.
Can you tell us about the classes? Because not only am I interested in signing up, I think other people might be interested. Because it's awesome that you get a chance to learn how to do it. So tell us about those and kind of how we can get involved.
Yeah, the key thing with that is like a lot of when we started off, you know, we heard a lot of people say, "Hey, I want to make this. I don't know how." Or and people are, you know, you can find of course information, but people get a little bit overwhelmed with mm-hmm. that. So that's the whole thing about it. Is one thing is teach people about what we do, but mm-hmm. also get them familiar with this whole process of making cheese and in a way how you can do that at home. And that's the whole setup. How we do it, it's we give people a hands-on experience with that. So people can come in, they can book online on our website. That we have all the classes listed. We have now a fresh class where we teach people about mozzarella and queso blanco.
Mm-hmm.
We have a butter making class, so they learn how to make butter plus and mix in all kinds of flavors. And then we have an aged cheese class, which where we teach people how to make like a little baby Gouda.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we take them.
What am I doing with my life? Why am I not in this class right now?
So it's one of those things, and we give them instruction. We give them a little presentation first about what's going to happen, and then they are basically there at the table in little groups, and they do go through the instruction. We have an instructor with them, so they if they get stuck, they you know we'll teach them. But it's really about you do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing. And it's in a very informal character. So people, it's kind of bring your own drink. Mm-hmm. So people can have a, you know, bring their own little wine or beer.
This is just crazy.
And so that's the whole setup. And then at the end, we give them a little tour and they have that's the cool. opportunity to buy some cheese.
Are
as
these
well.
Free classes?
No. No, we cannot do it for free.
Okay, because that would just be silly. Because then I would move into your building.
So, but, you know, the thing about it is what you can see is that and fees will change as we add more classes sure. to it, too. But everything is listed online.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically like a three-hour experience. So you come in, you get a presentation. We have a whole thing full of cheeses for you to eat. And
gotta go, everyone.
So... And usually we have some meats with that, and then and on top of that, you spend learning about how to make cheese. So
it sounds awesome.
It's like an evening. Usually, typically, it's an evening, and then for 3 hours, you spend time with us.
My husband great. And I will see you there.
You've made a fan. Oh, she already knows a fan. Now and, she's a stalker.
And I might bring cake. Can I bring cake?
Yes.
You said wine, right? Can I bring a little cake too?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we invite people to bring whatever they want to bring, you know.
Great.
And we don't do it only for this kind of classes. We also have more and more companies now doing private classes.
Mm-hmm.
So they can sign up with a whole group. And we're more than happy to organize for them. And again, there, you know, they call us and whatever they want to bring in, they can have like a standard class. We can change it a little bit for them. If they only have like a little bit of less, if they have some less time about mm-hmm. how to do it, you know, we can kind of sort things out for them.
Yeah,
very
cool.
Yeah. Well, Fonz, we really appreciate kind of opening up the world of cheese to us. And we certainly highly recommend, I mean, from our perspective, watchers and listeners going out. But for anyone who hasn't tried it, why should Indy get out and buy Tulip Tree Creamery products?
Well, it's, you know, if you want to taste something a little different and you still want to taste a local product, I think that's the key thing is like be amazed with some of our cheeses which we make over here. And they're recognized in the whole nation. We won some great awards. Last year we mm-hmm. had the best food award For us, you know, which was we picked up in San Francisco.
That's national, guys. That's national.
Yeah, and then we had several awards in the ACS with the American Cheese Society. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have a local, national, award-winning line of products here, and the cheeses are really very different than your regular cheddar or Colby.
Right.
And not that there's something wrong with those, but it's like if you want to go for something a little different, you know, if you're having a group of people over and you want to serve them something special, something local,
mm-hmm.
We have a great offering with products and it fits into any line. And if you're not sure, you can always contact us. You know, if you say, you know, I have a group of people coming in, I'm not sure what I would love to bring you cheeses, but I don't, you know, and then we ask them, say, well, do they love product? Do they love stinky ones or mm-hmm. a little bit milder? You know, what kind of age is there? And then we say, okay, well, probably these kind of cheeses would be a great way to go for.
You're customizing the cheese experience.
They could tell you what kind of wine they're going to drink, and then you could say what kind of cheese would go good with pairings and things, right?
Yeah, Laura has a whole list of things, I think, where she combines stuff.
Do you want to shout out to Laura? She's here, but not at this table with us. Hey, Laura.
And so we have the whole pairing with for what kind of cheese goes well with mm-hmm. what
Perfect.
Kind of wine. So
I love it.
Yeah.
So quickly we can connect to Tulip Tree Creamery on the website tuliptreecreamery.com, Twitter Tulip Tree Cheese, on Facebook Tulip Tree Creamery, and Instagram Tulip Tree Creamery. You got it all nailed down. Good brand points across the board. Final note is to, I'd ask you to say one thing to entrepreneurs of startup companies that are really wanting to get into the food industry here in Indianapolis. What word of wisdom would you give them?
Big thing, I think, is really prepare. It's not going to be easy. Really prepare, mm-hmm. do your homework, and it's going to take a lot more time than you think.
Be prepared. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Fonz. And we certainly appreciate your time and your passion towards really committing to a great Indianapolis success story. And we wish you all the luck in the world. We really do. And we're certainly going to grab a little bite here or there.
I'm going to take all the cheese from you before you leave.
It's going to be a cage match in here. Thanks so much, Fonz.
Thank you, Fonz, and
congrats to your success.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to be coming up and talking to our mascot, Paul Poteet, coming up right after this. Well, this was such a tedious investment in the Indianapolis community. We wanted to really help NX3 shine. It's a fantastic opportunity to be able to bring Site Strategics and everything that we've been able to grow to be here over the last few years, and then plug into the community, be able to help, be able to support a number of brands that are here. But more importantly, really, it's a gathering for our team to really just get out of the office and just have some fun together. A lot of times we're working so hard that we don't see a lot of the tech startup community. And this is exactly why we moved downtown, is to be able to have that connection. And this was a great platform to be able to really roll out what we do. Last year was the year of pivot. I mean, we left the South Side, knew that we had to be downtown in Indianapolis just because of the technology scene. And on top of that, we tripled our footprint, our square foot footprint downtown to make room for our live cast studio, as well as be able to expand into a much larger collaborative space for all our employees. Our role in the tech community is going to take off like a rocket ship. It honestly is, we look to help give lift to so many companies with our digital marketing tactics, as well as our studio to be able to paint the picture, tell the why story of so many of these organizations. We've got a great team of videographers, be able to, podcast technology that is surpassing almost everybody in the country. And I'm really proud of this convergence of skills and technology to help tell a story for all of these other companies. We have organically grown, and we are now bringing a great number of really sharp people into our organization. And it's time to do that now. And with everything that we've been able to invest in from skill sets and technology, we are now really able to tell our own story as well as so many other companies. And I got a lot of pride in who is part of this organization now.
I'm proud of each and every individual that works for Site Strategics. There's no way I could have ever done this without a good deal of blessings and a good deal of really caring people to get us to this degree. And I'm just so excited about what we're about to do. The next couple of years is just going to be fantastic.
So Edge of Indie is a weekly Facebook Live broadcast where we interact with some of Indie's best and brightest movers and shakers, promote our internal brands, so Site Strategics and Edge of Indie itself. Additionally, we wanted to really connect Indianapolis and form connections with people we might eventually want to do business with, you know, small mom and pop businesses or restaurant startup companies, small to medium sized businesses, some of Indie's bigger organizations. You know, there's a lot of good things happening, but a lot of times you're either missing it or you're so tied up in your day-to-day that you don't know what's going on. And so this is just a quick and easy way to learn about awesome things going on in our city. Edge of Indie is less than a year old. And within that year, we've had over 155,000 Facebook Live views, over 1,000 individual show shares and show likes. And then in terms of show downloads of the podcast itself, there have been over 4,000 of those. So what I want to say about Paul Petit is that he brings definitely a new energy to the show. It's kind of a dad energy. He and Aaron like to like swap the dad jokes and make it like a dad versus dad thing. And then you've got this blonde girl in the middle, this millennial that's just like, oh, dad. And it's always nice to have him. He brings a really fun energy and it's always good to know what weather lies ahead. We have a lot of big plans for what lies ahead. We are looking for sponsors. So to get companies engaged and kind of getting their backing and support in the community, maybe one day have more than one show a week. That's something to build towards. We are looking at having like on-site live shows on location other places. So taking it out of the studio, packing it up and going to our guests and interviewing them there. You should definitely tune in every week because we've got some great guests who really need some support here in Indianapolis. Just fun and a light, easy way to learn about what's going on. Tune in for some great, happy, lively, fun conversation.
Real life, real stories. Let's see what's trending in Indianapolis. This is Paul Poteet on the Edge.
Are you an air traffic controller? What are you doing?
Or windshield wipers.
He's windshield wipers.
It's a little known 70s disco dance called the windshield wiper for a while.
Welcome Hi, back. Paul Poteet. Welcome back to you.
Here's the difference. You know, I just got back from a cruise, and boy, are my arms tired.
There it is. See?
wait, where is everything?
Where is Henry Youngman when we need him, right?
Here's the difference between this is Indiana, and then this is, okay, that's Indiana.
Yep.
This is, I can go either way. What do you think?
Wow, okay, so you're internalizing your cruise, right? You're just kind of.
Close to my heart. Please, don't use that for a screen grab, okay?
Done, oh, it's already there.
Well. It's already all over the internet.
So where'd you go?
The ports of call were St. Martin and also St. Kitts and Old San Juan and then Labadee.
What?
Life goes on.
Oh, life goes on in Haiti. Four ports, 8 days, no waiting.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Want to give a shout out to the
people of Haiti.
The people of Haiti.
Yeah, those of you that might be streaming.
Edge of Haiti.
It wouldn't have been me streaming it because I did not buy the internet package.
That's an expensive little gem there, isn't it?
Yeah. And there were people, you know, it was interesting being like totally disconnected except for a couple hours when we were in San Juan because you have access suddenly to, we have AT&T. So all of a sudden you have the usual network.
Huzzah!
All of a sudden, you know, all of these, you look down and you see your email thing says 100. Beep, beep, beep,
bing, bing, bing. Everybody's beeping and pinging.
No, must not look, must not
look.
And
then you threw it overboard and then.
Yeah, they threw it overboard. It's interesting being disconnected for that much. The only thing that I really missed was like, we would be, you know, wondering or seeing some kind of bird off, you know, as we gazed off the balcony. And, oh, I wonder what kind that a bird that is. Can't look it up. So it was the reference stuff that I missed the most.
And what a great segue, because you're constantly referencing stuff for us on the edge here. So
I find some really creepy stories, even just being back, a couple of days. Apparently, the internet did not stop without me.
No, it's been busy.
Yeah, it's been busy. Oh, wait till we get to number three, as it were. But we'll start with daylight savings time. Do you say saving or savings?
I try to ignore the thing altogether because it really does annoy us.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We came back on Sunday evening. They turned the ship's time forward an hour on Friday night instead of Saturday night, because otherwise I guess it would get in the way of all the they're getting people off the boat on Sunday morning and they were afraid that nobody would know the real time.
Oh, wow.
And that would screw everything up. So we had to move our clocks forward on Friday night, that would have been. But people have a lot of, controversial feelings about, or a strong feeling, I guess, about, some savings time. And so I found this article, 10 Things You Didn't Know About It. And what I thought was the most interesting one, sometimes Benjamin Franklin gets the credit for it, I guess.
Right.
But there's some theory that he was half joking when he suggested it. The first serious case for daylight savings time came from a guy who worked at a post office by day, and he was an entomologist at night. George Vernon Hudson did most of his bug hunting at night, and he was frustrated by how early the sun set during the summer months, and he reasoned that springing the clocks forward would allow more daylight for bug collecting.
Holy.
Oh, that makes me hate this even more.
He controlled the world.
For bugs.
You know what he was? He was ahead of his time.
And Paul, so we've missed you, Paul.
He proposed the idea to a scientific society in New Zealand in 1895. It was panned for being pointless and overly complicated. 2 decades later, daylight savings time would begin its march across the developed world.
That's why it bugs me.
Oh, that's terrible. That is terrible. So, yeah, and then it got pushed into, it really became widespread, I guess, around World War I here in the country. And then it came back, it gained renewed popularity back during the big energy crises of the early 70s. And I guess up until that point, every state could kind of do what it wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then most states fell in line in the 70s, with some exceptions for a long time, here in this state being one of them. But,
they say it's also a health hazard.
Yeah, it is. It makes me sick.
Some studies say the extra hour of sleep we lose by springing ahead can affect us in terms of heart attack, stroke, and susceptibility to illness. But get this, on the other hand, there's another study that says the daily incidence of robbery dropped by 7% following the start of daylight savings time.
And I would rather be robbed.
You'd at least be awake for it.
Exactly.
Does it also have health effects towards kidney stones? I want to know.
Oh, yeah, that was my next question. Are you blaming your recent kidney stones on the lack of sleep? And nobody, by the way, do people suddenly get really healthy in the fall when we gain that hour back?
Yeah, Paul, stick it to science. You tell them.
Just saying. I mean, are you going to lose, any tiny remaining kidney stones this fall by getting another hour of sleep? Does it work both ways?
I don't want any kidney stones to fall, ever.
I'm sorry, everyone, that you're hearing this story.
Well, Pixar, it didn't happen.
Oh, no.
Nobody wants to see that, do they? Maybe Brittany is sticking pins in her voodoo doll view. That's story number two.
Wow, look at what Brittany has.
Hold it down, push it down a little, or tilt it a little bit, maybe. I can't see the draw. Okay, there you go.
It's literally a paper voodoo doll that has been on her desk.
Oh, my.
I have a whole pad of them.
You already were ahead of me on the story that I found.
And I have real voodoo dolls at home, too. Is anyone surprised here? No.
Creepy.
Nobody worried about that one.
And they're from New Orleans. So they're real.
Real voodoo dolls that you got suckered to buy.
I probably could have bought that in a gift hut on St. Martin. Yeah,
no, they don't have hexes there. They have hexes in Louisiana.
See, you literally, man, this story is right up your alley.
It really is.
Yeah, I'm psyched about it.
We're learning more about Brittany every day.
I was not expecting this to have quite the impact that apparently this did. They studied 229 employees, asked them to think of a worst workplace interaction that involved abuse from their boss. Some were allowed to take out their job frustrations on a makeshift voodoo doll carrying the boss's name by sticking pins, burning it with candles, pinching it with pliers. Confess! And a third of the study's participants reported lower feelings of injustice and said they were far less likely to still feel bitter once they'd, you know, taken a few whacks at the voodoo doll. So maybe Brittany's on to something. Revenge is the dish best served with dolls? I don't know. I'm just saying.
I'm just looking at the paper and just making sure my name's not on it. And I'm good so far, but I haven't seen the rest of her pack.
And your name is Ken or Barbie, I would be especially worried. Right, already labeled, you know?
Yeah, wow. Somebody.
Voodoo dolls.
Who knew?
I mean, I can see how that might be a release for some people.
I'd like to do that Homer Simpson thing. Way into a bush. Yes, that is definitely more about you than I thought I would learn. I'm so glad I picked that story. Boy, I hope nobody has a connection to story number three, though, like that, because it's about family toilet paper.
Yep, we're good.
Nope.
Okay. Thumbs up. A new trend, yeah, right, has folks becoming more environmental when it comes to wiping.
No. Yes?
Nope.
What you're seeing there is family cloth wipes.
No.
Reusable.
No.
Toilet paper. That's what I said. Reusable.
This is just wrong.
Everything about this is wrong and bad.
Some people only use it for, and I will be delicate here. Some people only use it for just the quick visit into the bathroom.
I don't care.
And then some people use it for everything.
No.
Who does the laundry? What a crappy job that would be.
What happened? I have so many questions. The first time someone brings this home and is like, family, I would like us to all give this a try.
Right.
Let's pass it around and see how it just feels.
Can't you get another use out of that? This is a conversation.
Is there some sort of an indicator, like when you buy the tires and they have that tread wear indicator?
That's disgusting.
Oh my!
Everyone who does
entirely disgusting is that?
Be ashamed. All of you should be ashamed. Who's purchasing this?
It's small cloth squares put in a basket. What? Are you allowed? People buy. We have. For a couple of weeks when we had our first son, we actually tried the
cloth diaper things.
Yeah.
So this is essentially, it's a cloth diaper for the entire family.
For grown-up people.
And it did not, that experiment lasted, I think, about 2 weeks with our first son, and we didn't even try.
Crazy. No.
You've got to devote some extra time. You've got to, mark out some extra time in your laundry work day if you're going to be doing that.
I would start charging people that if I'm doing your laundry, then you're paying me $100.
One user explained, quote, "In my mind, buying and using disposable toilet paper was literally flushing money down the toilet."
Mm-hmm.
There's something to say for the mental health of the entire family.
It's not money, though. That's the. There is a crucial difference in that. You can't take that into Walmart and buy more family cloth with that cloth.
No, you cannot.
You're flushing toilet paper down the toilet. That's why it's there.
Wow.
That's why it's called toilet paper.
Can't we focus our energies on something maybe more productive in society as opposed to the communal wipe? please.
That's disgusting. That actually is disgusting.
I don't even want to be in the same house with, you know, again, we had two teenage sons. I didn't want to be in the same house with their bathroom, you know, with.
You're telling me all of a sudden, on top of all the other kids' clothes, and trust me, there's some disgusting stuff there. Now we have, who's going to fold the basket of butt wipes?
Reusables.
And once you just eyeball that going, I don't think that's.
I'm moving out immediately.
I know a guy. There are three. That was a great group, wasn't it?
Ugh. Yeah. Thanks so much, man.
I can't stop thinking about it. Like how gross that actually. Ugh.
I don't know. I think I'm still stuck on the voodoo dolls.
Oh, well.
Maybe you could bind them both.
Maybe.
Pun intended. Yeah, that's right. If you're, what if you take the family cloth and use it on one of your voodoo dolls, and all of a sudden Uncle Fred is just squirming in his seat?
Or this could be reusable. Like you could use this as toilet paper.
Oh no!
Oh, she just went there. That's it, right there.
Oh my God, I'm a genius.
That's it. Yeah, you sell the disposable. They'd probably make more money if they sold the disposable.
Oh. I'm sure people
There's
would
a market
love.
Here.
I'm sure people would love to be able to abuse their voodoo doll with reusable bathroom wipe caricatures.
Well, the reusable bathroom wipe with like celebrities or political figures
Okay. No one steal my idea. I'm gonna make this a business plan.
Toilet paper voodoo.
Toilet paper voodoo dolls. It's mine. Nobody take it. Nope.
Okay, you've marked your territory. It's yours.
Oh. You can have it.
You can have it.
I'm looking for investors.
Where's Brittany? She'll be out in a minute. She's working on something. That was worth waiting 2 weeks for.
Yes.
Those are your stories this time around on The Edge.
I'm not sorry.
Oh, no, you're not. And that's
I think it's a great
that's,
idea.
That's the thing. Oh, well, we got to give our audience some weather here. So lay it on us. What we got?
We've got quieter weather now, thankfully, after a couple of days of, Tuesday, it was like springtime, only instead of thunderstorms bubbling up real quickly and just coming down in small areas with snow that was bubbling. Those crazy little snow squalls. Those can be tricky just because, you know, they limit visibility all of a sudden. But those are pretty much gone now for a few days. Although I do not like the way St. Patrick's Day is shaping up because that looks a little rainy and maybe snowy at the beginning and the end of the day. We might have some snow mixed in. But the parade itself, if I recall correctly, downtown is Friday. So that should be okay. Just cold. I've been in that parade many times, and it's seldom is it warm. It always seems like it's cold on the day they do that. But Sunday looks good, so if you're making your weekend plans, gravitate towards Sunday, and then we have some more rain, maybe, mixed with snow showers next Monday and Tuesday. The normal high, low 50s now, so most of those days are below average, which kind of looks like it probably is going to be the trend the second half of March before we light it up in April. It might be a little on the warmer side again come April.
April.
April's got a lot of responsibility.
Can't wait too when it happens.
But, you need to shake off that cruise mentality, Paul. You can't keep on bringing that. You're just bringing us down, man.
Yeah, I know. At some point, you have to get off the boat. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, life for everybody who wants to get on to Paul Poteet's boat, make sure you go check him out at paulpoteet.com, as well as follow him on Twitter at Paul Poteet. You can see all the Poteets everywhere, and boy, he's doing a heck of a lot, so go check him out. Anything coming up in the near future for you?
Starting this week, you'll actually hear me downtown Indianapolis reverberating around. I think it's along Georgia Street, and there's a new project where this company that...
Are you just like walking down the street with a megaphone? What's going on?
You would think, with
my... And a sandwich board.
Sandwich board weather. Here's your sandwich board 7 days. I walk out and say, yeah, my board just has like a big graphic. No, it's a little more high tech than that. And you'll hear like a mini virtual radio station along Georgia Street with music and little community updates. And one of the things you'll hear from time to time is me doing the weather. So it's one of those wacky little new media things.
Hey, you gotta love it.
That Mr. Weatherman is involved with, and I think it's going to be in some retail stores too, although I'm not absolutely sure about that. So if you happen to hear me in a gas station in the next...
Don't be alarmed.
Don't be alarmed. If you hear, is Paul doing the weather here? What is going on? That would be me also. So
cool.
Paul, all the poteets are everywhere. That's the thing.
And get away. I'm stuck to you.
Excellent.
Hey, Paul, I want you to know I've never made a voodoo doll of you ever.
Yeah, right. I've heard that before.
Not yet.
Not yet.
All of a sudden, they change the locks on the doors.
Well, Paul, thanks so much. And we will bounce back and see you next week. All right.
All right. See you later.
All right. Take care. Hey, we wanted to make sure that we jumped in to talk to you about Site Strategics briefly. Site Strategics is the actual title sponsor of Edge of Indy. We wanted to share with our listeners of the show a special offer. We actually provide digital marketing strategies to our clients regularly, and it goes without saying that we are constantly asked the question about the return on investment for what they're doing in digital marketing. So we wanted to be able to help our clients and prospects even understand their marketing ROI. So we actually have an offer going out. You can actually check it out online, and we certainly would appreciate you jumping into the landing page and letting us know your interests about digital marketing, if you are so inclined. We actually provide a digital marketing report that is basically a comprehensive set of understanding of your SEO, your content, your social media, your different marketing aspects, and we help actually calculate this into an ROI that you're receiving right now with your efforts. So if you want to jump in there, the site is offers.edgeofindy.com/ROI and sign up right there. If you actually do, in fact, want to engage with us, we'll actually give you a 30% discount on that report. So this is just us showing you who Site Strategics is, and on top of that, what we want to give back to our Edge of Indy listeners. All right, and on with the show.
This is Edge of Indy, showcasing Indianapolis tech trends, marketing industry champions, and business innovation, broadcasting from Edge Media Studios. Now, let's get back to today's topic.
Boy, we talked a lot about cheese, and then we cheesed it up with Paul for a heck of a long time, did we not?
I feel like I've carried a baby to term.
Well, it just so happens that we have somebody who could help you in that respect. Leah Parther, Program Director of Family Choice Surrogacy, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for waiting.
It's been a long trip today.
I was interested in the cheese. It was great.
We're all here for the cheese, right. Really, and this is just an added bonus that we get to talk to you.
You're joining us from Family Choice Surrogacy. Can you tell us a little bit about the company and about your background as it relates to Family Choice Surrogacy?
Sure. So Family Choice Surrogacy is a full-service surrogacy agency, and we match gestational surrogates with intended parents. And just to give you a little bit of information about my background, so my background is in business and human resources leadership, and then I went through my own infertility journey. And during that journey, I just felt very alone. It was complex, it was emotional, and we didn't know it at the time, but we were fortunate enough to have a healthy child out of our infertility journey. So. After that, I really just felt that I wanted to help other families who were going through that same journey. And so I started working at a local law firm who specializes in reproductive law. And we were able to help families all across the world recognize their dreams of becoming parents. And from there, what I noticed is that Indiana was often seen as not necessarily a surrogacy-friendly state from outside outside the state. Mm-hmm. Many people thought that it didn't happen here for a myriad of reasons. Mm-hmm. But I just really felt that passion for helping families grow. And once I was able to see our clients realize their dreams of becoming parents, I knew that I really needed to explore my passion even further. So this has been a long time in the making, mm-hmm. and we launched last year.
That's incredible.
Oh, my gosh.
And you've helped families not even just in Indiana, but throughout the world. So can you tell us kind of about your services that you offer and kind of what a family getting involved in this can expect if they come to a Family Choice Surrogacy?
Sure. So first of all, we find and qualify gestational surrogates. And I just kind of want to tell you a little bit, if you don't know about surrogacy, there are two different types.
Yes, primarily. Unpack all of it for us.
So traditional surrogacy is when the woman donates her egg and her uterus to carry a child for another family or another person. Mm-hmm. Gestational surrogacy is when the woman carrying the child has no biological link. So they're using an embryo from intended parents or a donor, that type of thing.
And it's just the vessel, so to speak.
Correct.
Okay.
And so we only focus on gestational surrogacy. Hmm. So our first, the first thing that we do is we find women who are willing and passionate about helping other families, and then we go through the qualification process with them. It's a long process. We do everything from criminal background checks to psychological evaluations, medical evaluations, insurance review. There are many pieces to the journey.
And there should be.
As there should
absolutely,
be.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And so we then will match them with intended parents. Mm-hmm. And so we try to match them based on their goals and their values that they want in their relationship. As you can imagine, there are a lot of different factors in that.
Yep.
And so they each have a choice to work together. So we want to make sure that we're aligning those values and hopefully, they're aligned. And then when they decide that they want to be matched and they want to work together, then there's a legal process. There's obviously a medical process mm-hmm. with the fertility clinics. and so we guide them through the legal and the medical process as well.
Wow.
All the way until we have
a
baby.
Until we're all holding the baby.
Yeah. Mm.
That's incredible.
Well, infertility is an issue that touches so many lives. It can be a struggle for individuals wanting to become parents. Can you tell us some of the latest numbers around infertility?
Sure. Infertility strikes 1 in 8 couples about 12% of married women.
Oh, wow.
It's that high?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you don't hear about it a lot because I think that many people suffer silently.
Yeah.
There's not.
Could that number actually be higher?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, those are numbers of people who are actually seeking medical intervention.
Exactly.
So I'm sure there are many more who are out there
right.
who are just trying or they don't have the means to, work with a fertility specialist. So those are just those who are seeking medical intervention. You feel very alone. I can speak personally to that when you're in that situation. You're not able to necessarily talk to your friends or family about it because it is such a personal issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that I've really discovered that I want to help is bring infertility to the surface. Let's talk about it. It doesn't have to be a secret. If you get support from other people who are also going through the same thing, you are going to fare better mm-hmm. emotionally. It's also financially devastating as well. Most insurances don't cover infertility treatments. That is increasing. However, most of the time it's out-of-pocket expenses, and it can be very expensive.
Mm. Well, surrogacy is a great option for, obviously, families who are looking to bring little ones into the family, and that includes same-sex couples. So what do you typically tell people the first time they come into your company? Like, how does it start? What does that process look like? And what do you tell people if they come in and they're not sure, or they're wavering on it, or they just want to learn more? What's that first step with you all?
I will say that typically most intended parents know that they're going to have to use surrogacy because they've suffered loss. Or, like you mentioned, same-sex male couples, if they want to have a biological connection to their child, surrogacy is also an option for
sure.
them. So typically they know that this is a route that they have to take. They just need to explore because, again, it can be so costly. So one of the things we talk about is what they're looking for and what they've been through. So I want to understand their story. I want to understand if they've had loss in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to make sure that we're sensitive to that. We want to make sure that we're really walking them through, holding their hand through the entire journey and offering them that personal service that they need. A lot of times they've experienced hope and then heartbreak and then hope and then heartbreak. So we don't want to offer them hope again.
Well, and before the segment, we were talking about Kim and Kanye because they are, you know, mainstream media. Kim had a surrogate for her latest baby that she's had, and it was mostly due to a medical issue that, you know, she couldn't, her other pregnancies were really tough and she couldn't manage to carry another baby on her own. So she went that route. And I think that's really, that's put a spotlight on surrogacy, and it's educating a lot of people as to what it is. And like, it's not something to be ashamed of. It's not something that you need to, you know, hide or be afraid to speak up on. So what are your thoughts on that? And do you think she's done a good job shining a light on it?
Actually, I do.
Good job, Kim.
Yeah, right?
I'm sure she's watching every video.
I do think that, you know, anytime there's a famous surrogacy story, it always makes you a little bit nervous because, you know, we do a lot to make sure that we're ethical in this field and that we're above board. And so you just want to make sure that nothing's going to jeopardize, helping these parents' dreams come true. And so, I think Kim handled it with grace. And I think that she has been very open about it, which hopefully will help others feel that they can do that as well. And so I'm thankful for Kim and Kanye.
Wow.
You actually said that.
Wow.
Sorry.
Things I never thought I'd say in my life.
That's the first time on Edge of
Indy. Beautiful, by the way.
Yes, she is. And I think Kim did a really good job also of explaining it was a gestational carrier.
Mm-hmm.
So it was her and Kanye's embryo. And one of the things I read just the other day, there's, a lot of issues around sex selection when it comes to your embryos.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, we just said we want to transfer the healthiest embryo. And so I think just having those conversations, even if they're from a celebrity, it helps.
Still counts.
Yeah. Surrogacy is increasingly common because of scientific advances, medical advances, and also because it's brought to the light by celebrities.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about earlier Indiana not being considered a surrogate-friendly state. And that's changing, and you're helping change that. Why the stigma? What is there a stigma of surrogacy, and why would Indiana or the Midwest be reticent?
Sure. I think there's a couple reasons for that. Number one, we do have an antiquated law in the state of Indiana that says that surrogacy agreements are not enforceable.
Oh.
Really?
However, yeah. However, when that law, and I'm not an attorney.
You're just playing one on TV.
Right. Literally. When that law was created, there was no such thing as gestational surrogacy. It was only, it was referring to traditional surrogacy, which the woman has the biological connection.
Right.
There have not been any disputes in any of those agreements for that law to ever be overturned.
Mm-hmm.
However, there have been other cases that haven't involved the agreement, but have favored the biological parents in surrogacy situations. And we are able to obtain a pre-birth order for our parents. So what that means is when their carrier is pregnant at about 20 weeks, the attorneys petition to the court that even though the carrier is giving birth to the child, she is not the mother. The mother and the father or the parents of the child are you list the intended parents' names, and they're able to get an order before the child's even born so that the birth parents are actually on the birth certificate. So there's no adoption process, which that is the case in some states.
Mm-hmm.
So, really? And the other reason I think is because this is the Midwest. We're not necessarily known rightfully or wrongfully as being progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you add those two together, I think that it just was a misconception that we weren't surrogacy friendly. But it happens here. It happens quite frequently.
Oh, and that's a good. That's the good news, is that it does happen frequently. It just, it's just a shame to have that type of moniker for Indiana, because it's all for the children.
Right.
It's all, you know, obviously for the parents, but I mean, it's an option that so many parents direly need, and to have even a perception of unfriendliness, that's a sad testimony, and we certainly want, we appreciate organizations such as yourself to be able to help demystify it, educate, mm-hmm. as well as embrace this option. So kudos to you.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. You know, there are states that have banned surrogacy. There are other countries that have. And, you know, you'll find differing opinions on it. But
there are still states that have it banned.
There are states that outlaw being compensated for being a surrogate. Mm-hmm.
That astounds me.
To be honest, you know, again, I'm not an attorney, but
playing one on TV,
yeah, right? You know, there are plenty of unfriendly surrogacy states.
Wow.
And
name two:
Louisiana, Michigan.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
Michigan, seriously?
Yeah, and New York.
Wow.
Although I think that's about to change. So, anyway,
well, there's no edge of those states right now.
No, better than them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is a family building option, and you know, it really helps someone achieve their dream of becoming a parent, and there's really no other simpler way to put it.
It's fantastic. Well, you're always seeking caring and qualified gestational surrogates, so you really work with couples and individuals to find that right connection. So what is the process?
Sure. So, you know, if someone would be interested in becoming a gestational carrier, obviously they would submit an application with us.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have carried a child before. You have to be raising that child or have raised that child.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. You have to be healthy, non-smoker, non-drinker, mm-hmm. no drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a clean criminal background. And from there, like I said, you would go through, you know, a myriad of other evaluations,
mm-hmm.
psychological, medical, criminal background check. And the process, we always say, is hurry up and wait. So it takes a while. And then once you've cleared all of those, you would then be presented profiles of parents who you could potentially be matched with.
Is there an age range for surrogates
yes.
that you shoot for?
21 to 42.
Okay.
So, and we can go higher than, you know, what you would normally consider a healthy pregnancy, because mm-hmm. we're just using the uterus. We're not using the eggs. Hmm.
Just borrowing space.
Yep.
Just renting.
Extreme babysitting.
Extreme babysitting.
Yeah.
It's a 9-month job there.
Yes. Yes. And then once they have profiles, you know, the parents and the carrier, they both need to agree to work with each other, or mm-hmm. at least meet.
Mm-hmm.
They meet. They also meet with a psychologist to discuss all of the psychological issues and mm-hmm. how they want their relationship to go.
Right.
And then you go through the legal process, which is setting up that agreement between the parents and the carrier that outlines all of their responsibilities throughout the entire journey. And then there's the medical process. So if they've got embryos created, then they'll do an embryo transfer. And then 2 weeks later, hopefully we have a positive pregnancy test.
Wow. What a journey.
It is.
It takes a village and a lot of time and resources to get it done.
You know, these caring ladies have said, you know, this is the most life-changing journey that I've ever been on.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, it must take a very special person to be able to do this.
Yes. You have to have a heart to be helping other, you know, right. someone else become a parent. And if you're a parent and you have that heart, then I think you want to be able to give that gift to someone else.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
It's awesome. Yeah. Definitely want to get the word out about
you
that.
You must have heard so many incredible stories. You've been open for a year, but, I mean, you're doing such great work. How's it touched you personally?
Well,
do you cry every day at work almost, probably?
Every like time a baby's born.
Every time, or every time you have like a connection between a surrogate and a, I would just cry all the time.
I'm amazed every day. I'm amazed that the intended parents that I meet have the strength to move forward and explore this option after the heartbreak that they've been through. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed at these surrogates who have the heart to help another couple. They're literally changing their life, their family's life, every single day.
Wow.
And so I am very fortunate and blessed to be doing this work and, you know, being able to build families. There's nothing better.
I feel like you get to work with kind of the best people because they're all, you know, just such big hearts and they are looking for this deep connection. And, you know, you probably got no bad people coming in your office, which is nice.
Let's hope not. It takes all kinds, but
that's true. That is true.
No.
Well, we certainly wish you all the best luck in the world, and we know that you're going to be coming across more and more incredible stories in your career, and it is an incredibly viable option and such a needed option for some parents, and a lot of times you're the only option to be able to have a child in their life, and it's a huge factor, and it's we want to give you as much support as possible to raise awareness, because Indiana, we want to lift up Indiana as a state that can provide this solution for parents or soon to be parents.
Will you come back, and next time you do, can you bring a baby?
I'll ask the parents if they'll let me bring.
They can come too. I mean, they can come too. You don't have to like
yeah,
take
right?
the baby. They can all come.
Maybe we'll have someone who will.
Well, she saw what we did to the cheese here earlier. I think they'd be kind of scared. Anyway,
I do love babies almost as much as I love cheese.
All right.
Oh my Lord. Well, any final thoughts for couples or individuals who might be interested in learning more?
Well, a couple of things. I just want to point out some support resources for people who are going through infertility. I know, like I said, I felt very alone, and I know many people do along this journey. But there's an organization called Resolve. It's the National Infertility Association, and they provide advocacy and a hotline for, you know, talking about these issues.
Right.
There's another organization called Fruitful Fertility. It matches you up with a mentor. I'm actually a mentor through that organization as well.
Oh, cool.
So anyone suffer, there's no cost. You just sign up and you're matched based on, you know, some of your similar experiences. And then there's also some online support groups. Daily Inspiration, I believe, is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have some anonymity there if you need that. But I would just encourage anyone who's going through the infertility journey to get some support. It helps.
Absolutely. So let's make sure our listeners know where you're located. Online is you're found at familychoicessurrogacy.com.
No, Family Choice Surrogacy. That's one S.
That's one S, not two.
Yeah,
all right.
It's one.
Family.
It's on
the screen, so I probably
so
can just
so everyone can confirm that has one
there.
S in it.
All right. Family Choice. Choicessurrogacy.com and facebook.com/familychoicessurrogacy. Twitter. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's been a long show.
I know.
Twitter, FC Surrogacy, and Instagram, Family Choice Surrogacy. What's one thing that surrogates need to know if they're wanting to get involved to be able to help these parents?
Just one. I would say.
Okay, I'll give you three.
Do your research.
Mm-hmm.
Be prepared to lose some privacy a little bit because we need to know everything about you, and be prepared for the best journey of your life.
Oh, thanks for what you do.
Thank you.
You're a special lady. I can tell.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and I appreciate it. And thanks for everybody watching the show and listening to the podcast. Thanks to everybody who was able to produce this show today. Be sure to go rate us and give us some reviews on the respective podcast platforms. We always look for some feedback from our audience. And let us know who should be on Edge of Indy next show. So this is Aaron Sparks, as well as Brittany Simpson, saying goodbye. And we'll talk to you next week. Remember to choose local and choose local often. All right. Bye-bye.